Listening Dog Media.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
The Hot Mess Mum. The mum most likely to send her kids to school in regular clothes on non-school uniform day. The mum who forgets to sign the permission slip for school trips. The mum who has probably put leftovers in her kids' lunchbox on more than one occasion. But most importantly, the Hot Mess Mum is actually rocking it and is doing a far better job than even she thinks. Please welcome our Hot Mess Mums, telling it as it is, Kelly and Jenny Powell.
It's the Hot Mess Mums Club podcast. I'm Kelly Pegg.
And I'm Jenny Powell.
And I'm so excited. Go on, you introduce him.
Oh, can I? Ladies and gentlemen, please, will you welcome, in the living room of his own house, Mr. Dale Pinnock, the medicinal chef.
Yay! Woo!
How's it going?
Yeah. Hello. How are you? And I'm such a huge fan. And thank you so much for doing what you're doing in just educating correctly people about nutrition and what they're feeding their families first and foremost.
Thank you. It's, it's never become more poignant, I don't think. I mean, I think over the last few years, definitely in this country, people have become more and more thoughtful about what they're eating and how they're eating. But when we're kind of overtly faced with something like this that really does show us the true value of being in good health, then it's when we start to realise how much this stuff matters.
It was funny because I put a little post out. Sorry, Kelly.
No, you go, Jenny. There's a delay. Fine, you go.
It was interesting because I put a post out. I just put little sort of teasers out, but I said, look, we have time. And you know what this does? This gives us time to think about nutrition. You know, I think we lead such busy lives that as much as I'd like to, I'm out and about all the time and with the kids. I just, that famous thing about not having time, but now I have all the time to really make sure that it's considered, you know, what I'm cooking, why I'm cooking it, where I'm getting it from. And, you know, we can be considered about this now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think because there's definitely a priority shift as well for people. I mean, you know, there's always been that, those kind of barriers before where people have had to juggle what they're allocating different elements of their funds to. But now a lot of our life has become restricted. It's like, well, look, our main outgoings are going to be the food that we eat and what we consume in this time, because, you know, we're not going to be going out anywhere. Our actual movements are completely limited. So I guess we're kind of lucky. Well, lucky, I mean, that's not probably not the best word to use, but we're in a position now where we can probably make better choices in that respect.
It was, I was shocked though, that obviously because everyone's talking about, you know, you've got to look after your immune system. That's so important, especially with this virus. And then the sales of alcohol went through the roof. And I don't know about you two, but when I've been to the supermarket, I've seen people packing their trolleys. And apparently the only beer that's left is Corona. And I just, I mean, I know. So we all know no one likes Corona. But it's just a bit like, oh my God, what are you doing? Because yes, we're restricted. This is the time now to really look after ourselves and our family. And people are just buying loads of booze. I find that really scary.
I can understand it. I mean, in some ways, because for some people, this sort of lockdown, this thing that's been imposed on us, is really, really eating away at their mental well-being. I mean, I know quite a few people that are just absolutely losing their stuff over it. And we're not even a week in. So I can imagine if people are feeling really, really cut off and they're feeling like there's nothing good left in their lives, then a little bit of something pleasurable is kind of understandable. And it's such a a deeply ingrained part of the British culture as well, isn't it? It's they probably like rather lose their leg than their booze. But it's a strange one. I mean, the one that really kind of made me scratch my head as well is like when we were really in the midst of the panic buy, it seems certainly around my area, around Cambridgeshire at least, that things have settled down a little bit. You know, people have stopped going absolutely mental and buying 100,000 toilet rolls, and the supermarkets are catching up and everything seems back to normal. But when we were in the midst of that kind of panic phase, I noticed that all of the stuff that was gone was the crap. Do you know what I mean? It was all the processed nonsense. It was all the junk. And the fruit and veg were there in abundance. And I was kind of like, this is the stuff that's going to support your immune system. This is the stuff that's actually going to support your health. I understand stocking up on the dry stuff and the staples and that kind of stuff. It makes sense if it's like full on apocalypse and, you know, we're completely isolated. Fine. Those kind of things will be the difference between starving or not. But when there's such an abundance of things that aren't overly pricey but are real valuable tools for supporting your health, it's a real sign of the priority sometimes, that's the stuff that was left behind. That's the thing that made my mind boggle anyway.
Yeah, and it was quite interesting at that point where things were selling out in the supermarkets to see what people's habits were and where everything, you know, what was disappearing and what wasn't. Yeah. I'm just desperate to know sort of the sort of, now that things have changed, but also we still don't want to go regularly to the supermarket, which does mean, like for me, for fresh produce, I'd like love to go every day or every other day, especially when I haven't got anything else to do. But, you know, it's kind of getting the fresh essentials, your short list of what they should be. And also, I'm just brimming with things, but also I wanted to talk about, you know, it's about mental health and just keeping people, you know, mentally okay. Obviously, it's about your gut, isn't it? Everything is down to your gut health, and it affects your mind so much.
There's a lot of things that are relevant to gut health. I mean, the gut is certainly one of the real kind of, I mean, this is probably not the best word to use for the gut, but the sexy talking points around nutrition at the minute, because there's been so many amazing discoveries around the influence that our microbiome, our bacterial colony in the gut, can have on multiple aspects of systemic health beyond the gut. So our microbiome can definitely influence the immune system, for example, is one of the key ways of priming the immune system positively. But some of the mental health links have been a little bit misconstrued, but that might be a conversation for a little bit later, because that's a total soapbox moment for me. But
I'll have to come back and do that one.
But I think, like, in terms of those staples or ways to get ahead, there's several ways you could look at it, really. I mean, there's the obviously the area in the supermarket where a lot of produce are on a reduced price. If there's any fruit and vegetables in that section, get some of those, chop them up into freezer bags and start to freeze them. Yeah, they're absolutely fine and they'll keep really, really well. They're, you know, they're on the kind of tail end of fresh, so perfect for freezing at that time. You could even start making soups and sauces with them. So I like to do, like, this is something that I actually originally developed when we were filming Eat Shop Save for getting vegetables into kids that won't normally eat them. And it's a hidden veg sauce, but it goes to show how you can make things like pasta sauces, curry sauce bases, those kinds of things, by adding a multitude of vegetables, then seasoning it and adding, like, maybe chopped tomatoes or those kinds of things, and pureeing it, portioning out into freezer bags and laying them flat.
You can get portions of the sauces.
Yeah, so yes, you've got a tasty sauce, but also you've upped its nutritional density, and you've got things there that you can stockpile without spending much money and without rinsing the supermarket.
Yeah, I have this obsession with pasta sauces, and the second ingredient is flipping sugar.
Oh. Awful. There's no need for it to be in there.
I could not. I spent about 2 hours once in the supermarket going through every single jar to find one pasta sauce that didn't have freaking sugar in it.
Right.
And, you know, now's our opportunity, like you say, then, to get the sort of, like, in the bargain bucket, get your tomatoes or whatever, puree they up, put some seasoning in, because seasoning is the way forward, I think. Seasoning and herbs and all those things really can change stuff up. So you don't notice that, oh, it doesn't taste as sweet and, you know, yucky as
often. With like a pasta sauce, if you start off with garlic and onions at the base and add a good amount of a good sea salt at that starting point, you're going to get so much more depth of flavour. Okay, yeah. You don't have to pile it with loads of other rubbish. It's going to taste good because the garlic and the onions give a very, very strong, deep, savoury profile if you season them properly.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's something as simple as that, just making sure that you season your foods, making sure that you add a lot of these key ingredients going to deliver flavour and deliver nutrients as well, because garlic and onions, they've got vitamin C in them. Okay, a fair amount of the vitamin C is probably going to get lost in the cooking, but also there's things like long chain polysaccharides, very large complex sugars that are prebiotics. So they will actually work as a food source for the bacteria that live in the gut. And when the bacterial colony feed on these long chain sugars, it's like a fermentation reaction called saccharolytic fermentation. And this triggers the release of all these other beneficial byproducts that then improve the health of the gut, can have untold benefits for immune health, and it starts to cascade. You know, there's loads of different ways in which these simple everyday ingredients that don't cost the earth can support your health.
And it takes, when you make your own pasta sauce as well, you can whip something up within 5-10 minutes in the blender and put it over the pasta. Yeah. When you buy the pasta baked, you're looking at a 40-minute cook, aren't you, really? So, I mean, and I think that's where a lot of the time people don't realise that. They think just throw the jar on, it's a lot quicker, but actually it's quicker to make your own. It might be a bit messier, but it is quicker.
Yeah. And now we've got time. Now we've got that time on our hands, and now families are together. It's a really good opportunity to start getting the kids in the kitchen and involved as well, because this is something that I've certainly found over the years, like with Eat Shop Save especially, when we've got kids involved in preparing the food, many of the barriers between them trying something new or gravitating towards healthier options are reduced because they have an emotional investment in the process. It's like when they bring a drawing home and want you to put it up in the house. There's an emotional investment in this creative process. If you're getting them in the kitchen and saying, right, what else should we put in there? What should we do? Roll your sleeves up and get involved. Could you do that for me? Could you wash this? Getting them involved in that creative process, it's become like this group creative task, and it does seem to break down a lot of the barriers. So it could be a perfect time to actually address some of those things and try and broaden their palate as well.
And maybe we need to do that in schools again, and for adults to have more cookery classes and more focus on nutrition when they are in schools, I think. Because I know, like, my daughter's changing schools, and the school she's going to, they do cookery classes. And she's so excited about that. But I'm excited because I hope that it helps her, you know, because she's got a terrible sweet tooth. And it's a battle all the time with her over that. Because I just think there are so many people that just aren't educated and they aren't raised with homemade cooking, so therefore they live off like processed food or microwave food or whatever.
Yes. And it's bizarre, isn't it? Because it became, I mean, this is a whole other kind of philosophical discussion point, but when you look at what a lot of the school curriculum is built around, it's built to create drones for industry. You know, yeah. There's very little that's there to truly support the growth and development of a human being. We're not taught about finances and, you know, financial abundance and security. We're not taught really about how to look after our bodies. We're not taught about the day-to-day basics that really are going to get us through crap like we're going through at the minute. Yeah. And it's not a surprise that those things have been removed from school. It's just like, well, you know, what impact is it going to have on industry? I mean, I can safely say I've never used pie once in making a pie or in doing any, you know, 2 degrees and a master's later, and most of that stuff I learned at school was completely useless. So, you know, it's
interesting. I think our kids now, they're back at home, are going to learn a lot more. I said this yesterday on another show. I said they're learning a lot more, I think, than in the past few days. Than, yeah. You know, they do at school, thanks to the DARF curriculum, just my opinion. But the other thing, just quickly, so many questions, is, you know, you mustn't, are you sort of, if we all got to sort of be careful about ordering supplements, you know, maybe thinking, you know, if I order loads of food supplements, like vitamin supplements, that might help us out if it gets to that point where we feel we're not sort of getting the right.
I'm a fan of supplements. I'm a massive advocate of supplements. Alongside a good diet, obviously. But in terms of, like, I mean, putting my clinician's head on, I mean, because I guess we should clarify for a lot of people, even though I've kind of worked with food for a long time, none of my formal training has been in sort of catering or kitchen. My background is trained as a clinician, as a clinical nutritionist at both undergrad and master's degree level. So putting my clinician's head on for a minute, in acute circumstances, there is definitely room for supplements. And if you look at a lot of the clinical data that's been done around certain supplements in the immune system, something like vitamin C doesn't often perform that well. The actual reliability of the data is very, very low. But then you look at things like zinc and vitamin D, and these have consistently performed very, very well in clinical trials in both the context of preventing infections and helping us to deal with infections. Obviously, we're dealing with something that is unique now. We're dealing with something that none of us truly understand a great deal about from a pathophysiological basis through to long-term implications, mutation potential, all of that kind of stuff. So we're in pretty much uncharted territory at the minute. But what we do know is how the body responds to certain nutritional triggers, certain nutritional interventions. And in that, you know, with that in mind, I do think supplements have got their place. I am rattling at the moment. I'm taking vitamin D, I'm taking zinc, I'm taking mushroom polysaccharides, I'm taking astragalus, I'm taking it's literally that much, a broad spectrum probiotic. And I don't see, none of these things are going to do you any harm. You have to do something.
But get the right ones as well.
Yes, yeah, yeah. You have to do something pretty weird to harm yourself with vitamin C, right? I mean, it takes some pretty strange goings on for you to actually do yourself some damage. The worst thing that'll happen is if you take too much, you'll get the squits for about an hour. That's it. Grand scheme of things, that's probably not that bad. But I do think it could potentially give you some benefit, but do not think that is automatically a hall pass to be eating rubbish. You know, you need to bring these two things together, and you need to be active, and you need to be managing your stress, and you need to be getting some fresh air. You need to bring all of these variables together.
Jenny mentioned earlier when we first started chatting about the link between the mental health and good food. And I know you were saying it's a whole other kind of discussion, but on a more basic level, when you eat healthy and you do look after yourself and you move more, you generally do feel better up here, don't you?
I mean, so many people overlook the fact that the brain and the nervous system is a physiological system, the same as the cardiovascular system is, the same as the digestive system is. It's because those other systems, something like, you know, the cardiovascular system or whatever, is very much purely controlled and regulated by internal biochemical events, biochemical profiles, etc., etc. With the brain and the immune system, you've got that brain and the nervous system, you've got that very, very unusual circumstance where it's a combination of biochemistry and experience. You know, biochemistry can influence your experience, and your external experience can influence the biochemistry, and these two things intertwine. So it's often viewed very differently, and we don't think that we can influence it by normal health practices that we would be able to influence other body systems. But absolutely we can. We can influence the production of neurotransmitters. We can influence the types of, you know, neurological responses we have to things. We can't control anything in the external world, but we can control how we respond to it. You know, it's like, to give you an example, I've boycotted all news. Right. I have deleted all of the news things from my phone. I've deleted Facebook. I don't watch the news. I mean, I'll watch about 10 minutes in the morning with a cup of coffee. Then that's it. It's just like, has the government made any kind of crazy announcement that I need to know about? No. OK, switch it off, move on, and try and maintain an element of normality. That is me trying to cope with the external variable. OK, so the external situation is what it is. You can take steps to deal with it. That will influence the biochemical terrain of the nervous system to some degree. But also what you're eating, how you're fueling that system. And you think about, you know, the brain and the nervous system is how you're perceiving everything. You know, it is that filtration mechanism that the world around you is broken down through, and how you come to certain conclusions and responses. You want that system to be working as well as it can and to be fueled as well as it can. So if you're running on fast food takeaways, or if you're running on Whole Foods, you're going to be having some pretty different experiences. And that's purely down to just the biochemical events that are taking place within the nervous system. So let's just use anxiety as an example. If you're in the full throes of anxiety, of course, most of the time it's going to be triggered by what's going on out there. One practice is to try and remove as many of the triggers as possible, as that example I just gave. The other one, you could increase your intake of magnesium in the diet. Now, the mineral magnesium, that actually encourages your central nervous system to produce much more of a neurotransmitter called GABA. GABA is the primary inhibitory neurotransmitter, which just calms things down and slows things down. It can slow the heart rate. It can stop the mind racing. It does not take away what's going on. It just changes the way in which your body's responded. So you can see how the two things can fit together.
Yeah. So we're a friend of mine is I've just got to go and do a quick shop for her. I'm just sort of thinking ahead here, because I've got to go out now for her. And you know, it's perfect timing, because I'll have to leave it out on the doorstep for her. But you know, what are the key things you think I should be leaving her in a supermarket bag this year?
How old is she?
She's 50.
50. Okay, so
how old is she as well then? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like, obviously if she's in the older age group, then that will change things a little bit, because you've got, you know, the kinds of things that, you know, appetite's affected in that age group. It becomes like a whole different can of worms. But someone 50, good quality proteins. One thing I really do need to drum home at the minute is protein is going to be one of your best friends at the moment, because you need that amino acid density to support the immune system, but also to support some of the potential inflammatory events that might go on, and make sure that everything is, you know, is regulated in a healthy way. So protein with each meal. It doesn't mean that you have to eat animal proteins. I mean, if you're vegetarian or vegan, you can opt for, like, you know, eggs and dairy if you're lacto ovo. If you're vegan, then pulses, tofu, anything like that can be really, really good. Tempeh. As long as there's a good protein source with each meal, then you're going to be making sure that you've got that flood of amino acids. So any good protein sources for her. The most nutrient dense vegetables that you can find that tend to be the darkest colored ones. So think red cabbage, think kale, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, those kinds of things, dark red peppers. So when you're looking at the peppers and things like that, the darkest ones you can find. Same with the tomatoes, the darkest ones that you can find. It means there's a higher concentration of a lot of the key phytochemicals in there. And yeah, and in terms of like the carbohydrate staples, make sure they're the multigrain. You do not want white refined carbohydrates at the minute. That makes white blood cells docile. So the white blood cells, the leukocytes, the army of the immune system, excessive glucose and insulin curves. Mm-hmm. So excessive refined carbohydrates can actually make the immune system perform quite poorly. So any of those carbohydrate staples, make sure they're the multigrain. So with the bread, a good quality granary bread that's got lots of different seeds and things in there, rice, brown rice, pasta, like a whole wheat pasta ideally, anything like that. So that's it. Good quality proteins, the most nutrient dense fruits and vegetables that you can find. So just think the darkest colors. So with the fruits, you're talking berries, that kind of stuff. And very, very low glycemic whole food carbohydrates.
See, that is so useful, Dale, because, you know, it can get, and I think because we're overthinking almost now, it gets a bit overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You know, I get a bit like anxious about going, because I'm like, gosh, you know, I just don't know where to start. I know a bit about that, and I know that's probably all right, but just a potted sort of, you know, version that you've done for us, you know, it's really useful.
Back to basics as well, really. That's the thing.
I often think about what my dad's like in his 90s now, and I also think, well, how they cook. Exactly. They haven't changed a thing. They cook exactly the same as they did back in South Africa 65 years ago before they left. Yeah. And came to White Bread City. And, you know, my dad, oily fish. You know, I've said to my mum, you know, she's 80, I said, listen, I'm going to get you a stack of oily fish. But he loves it anyway. He's got, you know, and it's interesting, because I think maybe that is something you should do if you've got, you know, you think about what your might be grandparents for most people used to eat and how they eat. She cooks everything, Mum, because she's, you know, she's got nothing else to do. She hasn't for about 30 years, so that's what.
Excellent. Yeah, it goes to show. I mean, you look at patterns of longevity in some of these blue zones and these countries where there is a healthy population into their later years, and it's the ones that are adhering to the traditional cooking methods and dietary staples that have sustained their culture for generations. It's only when we start like migrating towards factory made rubbish that the problems start.
Hot Mess Mums.
It's too irresistible. We're going to just have to have him back. So we'll be catching up with the lovely Dale Pinnock, otherwise known as a medicinal chef, on Monday.